You're listening to a Rare Drop podcast. Check us out at raredrop.co.
Hey everyone, Kevin here, asking you to head over to our Patreon and check it out. Enjoy benefits like exclusive content, merch discounts, and behind-the-scenes looks at all things Rare Drop. Go to patreon.com/raredrop to become a member today, and thank you so much to our current patrons who helped make this show possible. Dave the New Nerd, Neil Anderson, Jack DeVille, Philip Snyder, Jedi Chappie, Paul Marzik, Aether Mana, Respect KS, Petey Club, Wow Dad, Justin McMahon, Stephen Purd, Matt LaRue, and all of the other patrons. Thank you so much.
Explore epic sagas with Rare Drop Roleplay. Recap the latest in sports with Overplayed. Unleash your inner hero on comics. Dive into a galaxy far, far away through Star Wars and Scotch. And pick the brains of industry experts on Broman Podcast. Whatever you're looking for, Rare Drop Entertainment has you covered. Check out our full lineup at raredrop.co.
How chaotic. Thank you so much for joining me. Hi, everybody. Welcome to Broman Podcast, episode 141, featuring Young Khan, founder of Khan Art LLC. I am incredibly happy to have Khan on the podcast. I've known him and known of him for a long time. I've followed his career, which seems to be ever expanding. And so if this is the intro and you are an artist, this is a must listen to episode. And I said it. So tune in. Without further ado, and before we get into anything, Khan, I think it would just be amazing, obviously, introduce yourself. But then, you know, how many projects are you working on right now? That would be my first question.
Okay.
Well, please introduce yourself first. Yeah.
I'm Khan. I'm a graphic designer, motion designer, illustrator, animator. I make merch. If you thought about trying it artistically, I've probably tried it and have been halfway successful at it. How many projects work? How many currently? That's a really hard question. I usually have anywhere between 5 to 10 projects I have my fingers in at the same time.
Okay.
But I'm booked out with probably 4 to 5 months of work at the moment. And a month ago was 6 to 7 months of work. So,
holy cow.
I don't know.
That is so. That's wild. So I guess to start, I'm super interested. What got you into art? Like, what was the spark and inspiration that led you to think, like, I want to take what I have inside my head and I want to put it out there?
Okay. So like most people in high school and middle school, you know, you have your artistic, you know, kind of jump off point. You start to draw stuff. You're like, oh, this is kind of fun. You start doing a little bit, and then you fall off right after high school is over. That lasted till about 22, 23, and then at 25, I just stopped making stuff for a whole decade. And then around, you know, 34 or 35, Destiny came out.
Hmm.
And I was like, and I saw this guy on Instagram, his name's COD1, do these pieces of Destiny fan art. I'm like, oh, I'd love to make Destiny fan art again. And so I started making Destiny fan art, and that kind of, you know, spiraled off into this wild, wild journey of just doing, like, you know, one or two pieces on the, you know, on the trackpad on my refurbished laptop to this, like, business that it's spiraled out of control.
Legitimately, like, the first pieces of art you were cranking out, that was on a trackpad?
The first pieces of art I made on a trackpad on a refurbed MacBook Pro. So the first, like, 100 emotes ever made were on a trackpad.
Wow.
The first, like, profile pictures were, like, I use the pen tool in Photoshop. You can, like, take a pen tool and click it, and you can drag it and, like, turn the curve to make line work. I did it all like that, which made me very, very patient.
Yeah, I can't imagine. I feel like the images in my head is like the Buddhist monks do the sand drawing, right? They'll take them like an entire year to finish it, and then they just sweep it. Like at the end, they just like sweep it up, and they're like, yeah, enjoy the experience of just my patience. I couldn't imagine doing something like that on a trackpad. So it's just kind of something that you jump back into when Destiny started.
Mm-hmm.
And then it evolved into what sounds like a crazy whirlwind that you managed to ride to where you're at right now. What were the steps in between there? Like, what, I'm super curious, like, what was your first business purchase?
Ooh, okay. So the first business purchase was I got an Intuos tablet that had no screen. And ooh. I used it for 2 weeks. And then I unplugged it and started doing trackpad again because it I can't draw on something where I can't see what's going on. So I put that away. And then I worked for another month or so in my business where I was making emotes for people. I started making my emotes for people, and I never watched Twitch before. Like, I didn't know what Twitch was.
Wait.
Yeah.
You started making emotes for people before you knew what Twitch was?
Yes.
That is wild. Keep going.
You remember the podcast boom, the Destiny podcast boom, like right when Destiny came out?
You had
Guardian Radio, you had X1.
Little Light Radio.
I was doing profile pictures of Guardians or of the podcast hosts in their armor.
Mm.
So people saw that, like, hey, a guy approached me one day. He's like, can you make emotes for Twitch? It was the affiliate program just rolled out.
Yeah.
And I was like, yeah, I can make emotes. What's an emote? And so I had to research what an emote was. And so I started doing that. And that generated like so much like small income. Like, I was making, a couple $100 a week. At $5, I can't believe I was trying to $7 an emote.
Wow.
And I was making those. It just hit me like a ton of bricks. And I was making them on a trackpad. And that gave me some good grocery money, some gas money between that and working at the bar. I was like, this little side money. I'm like, this is going pretty nice. Mm. But then it started to like get out of hand where I was making like 40 or 50 emotes on a weekend. Mm. And that, gave me enough capital to get my first tablet with a, actual screen.
Right.
And I moved on to there. Yeah.
That is an intense journey. So it lines up with something that I see you say a lot when people are asking you for advice. And even in the comics that you put out for advice is that, like, you really aren't a fan of excuses. You have always put off this energy that, like, if there is a problem, you will solve the problem, right? Like, it just takes, as you said, patience, which I guess that trackpad taught you. And clearly is something else you had spades before that. So what do you have to do anything to overcome those? Like, do you have the voices in your head that are like, oh, I don't know, that might be too risky? Or is it just something you have like pummeled into submission through excellent practice and discipline?
It's pretty much just practice and discipline.
Mm.
I grew up, like, if anybody doesn't know, I've been doing martial arts for, well over 20 years now. So a lot of the discipline I got was from doing stuff like that. Like, teacher tells you to go stand in the sun and hold a position for an hour. You go out in the sun and hold a position for an hour. You sweat, you stand there, you breathe, you get through it, you come back the next day and do the exact same thing. It's boring, it's tedious, but that's how you gain a little bit of inner strength. But whenever I'm approached to do something or I want to try something new, I don't think, what if I fail? I'm like, I might fail. So what? I'll try something else afterwards. I don't have the mindset of like, failure is the end. Failure is never the end. Failure is the end when you quit. Once you quit, then it's the end.
Mm.
Like, you don't catch me in a fight and I'm like, getting beat down. I'm like, if I can stand back up, this fight ain't over.
Yeah. So I love that perspective. I feel like one of the things when people are looking to start a business themselves or they're looking to start to kind of kick off into, I want to be an artist, I want to work for myself, that the rejections seem to hit really hard. And then it's like, oh, well, that's it. They said no, so I'm done. But that idea that failure isn't the end, you're just done when you quit, is super profound. And it's meditative, which I'm a huge fan of. So when you're, to totally transition into like a different set of ideas, when you're getting creative, right? When you need to be creative, for example, you're talking about cranking 50 emotes out in a weekend. How do you maintain that output?
Creativity. People say that creativity is like a gift or something. Creativity is a skill. It's something you sharpen every single day. Like, if you're a writer, for Saturday Night Live. You don't go into work one day and be like, I'm not feeling very creative. I'm not going to make anything this week. I'm going to get fired. You're going to get fired on the spot and I'm going to replace with somebody else. Everything I make may not be S-tier creativity, but I'm going to, regardless if it's going to be S-tier or F-tier, I'm going to make it. I'm going to produce it. When people rely on, they look at their work and they have this standard in their mind. And, you know, a standard is good. I don't think about when I make things as pulling something from the ether down from the gods, and I'm being mused by the spirits or something like that. There's nothing there's nothing ethereal about the thing I do. I look at the work like I'm building a house. You know, there's wood. You know, there's nails. You know how to build the house. You start at the bottom, you work your way up. If you mess up, you tear wall down, you put the wall back up. That's the exact same way I think about everything I design. That's pretty much how I've gotten through 5,000 plus emotes.
I was going to ask what the total was at.
5,100 plus.
Holy crap.
In 4 years.
In 4 years. So
I've made more emotes than you'll ever use. That's my tagline.
That's incredibly accurate. And so that's what, when you're doing emotes for literally everyone, like you were always showing up on my Twitter feed, like, oh my God, I got new emotes from Young Khan. I was like, this guy is just everywhere. Like and I was like so happy, and I was like, this is great. Like, I love seeing people take advantage of like these opportunities that are being presented, right? It's always so cool. And then you started, and then you just kept going. Like, I think that that is one of the things that has impressed me most. What was it that you were like, okay, I'm doing this emo thing, it's working really well, I want to start doing all of the other design that you're doing? Like you mentioned, like you have tons of projects, you're working on motion, you're not just doing emos, you're doing traditional graphic design, I see you do branding, like you do so much. So what what drove that process?
It all comes down, I'm pretty sure every person that's creative, when somebody sees what you do, they say, can you do this for me? And you're like, no, I don't do that stuff. For me, somebody that's, you know, I grew up in some pretty rough situations. You're going to make some money, you're going to have to, you know, adjust.
Right.
When somebody comes to you for a logo design, like, well, you know what? I'll tell you what. This is how I approach every new piece of content or every new avenue I've come to try out. Somebody came to me once, was like, can you make an esports logo mascot? And I'm like, no, I can't do that right now. But I tell you what, I will do this esports logo mascot for you for a quarter of the price what anybody's charging as a test run. And if it's good, you can give me another 25%. On how it looks. And that small little, like, because everything I do is practice. Everything you do every day is practice towards the next thing, the next goal, the next project. It doesn't stop with what you have in front of you. Like, this is the best it's going to get. No, everything's a building block to learn one new trick, one new step in everything you ever do. If you're just looking at your work like, well, this is as good as it's going to get, that's true for you. It'll be as good as it's going to get.
Yeah.
So somebody's come to me, when I see a hole in the market, you know, a quote unquote hole that somebody wants me to fill in particular, I'm like, yes, I will learn how to do that. Do you do pixel art? No, but I will learn. Do you do logos? No, but I will learn. Do you do motion design? No, but I will learn. That is how I've pretty much moved from emotes into doing shaker designs for gamer subs to making the logo for a Rare Drop. It's every single step of the way has been no, but I will learn how to do it.
That's so I think that one of the hangups that people run into when they run up against like limitation, like, I don't know how to do this yet, which I love the way that you like, no, I'll learn. This idea of approaching your craft as practice is something that it's like incredibly beneficial. I was raised in an environment where everything was like very outcome based, and unless you had a good outcome every single time, things did not go well for you. So, and in a lot of ways, so the idea that you can just say, no, it's all practice, and taking the power away from failure, because like you can't fail practice. Like, you really can't. Like, if you go, I used to wrestle in high school, and I fucking sucked at any sort of upside down stuff, right? Like any handstand work, anything we're doing to work on your proprioception upside down, couldn't do it. I fell over constantly. I must have walked across and smashed my face in those mats like hundreds and hundreds of times. But my coach wasn't running up to me during the warm up and during practice being like, "Hey, dumbass, like you're not doing this right." He was like, "Keep trying. That's why we have practice." And I think that taking that level of mindfulness into our career, because I feel like what you just said applies that's to everybody, right? I think taking that sort of mindfulness into your career and taking that power away from failure enables you to take all of those steps, to be creative, to make the decision like, I'm not afraid to say no, so that means I'm not afraid to say I'll do it for you at a quarter of the cost. Because especially in the graphic design profession, being able to show that you've worked for people is huge. So
the way I look at everything, you get by your reputation. Your reputation carries you, you know, as far mm-hmm. as you'll let it. Over the course of, you know, 5 years, I've had well over, you know, 2,000 clients, and every single time, I've probably only had less than 30 people not be happy with what I've produced for them. Mm. With that being said, your client is going to be the best source of advertising you'll ever have. I've never put an ad out in my life, and people say, "Well, you did work for X, Y, and Z." I'm like, if you want to ask them how I did, you can go and ask them. Here's a long list of people that, you know, and that kind of feeds your fire to do better and better every single time you have a new client, because you want them to speak highly of you. Somebody speaking poorly of you, like, why would you want to work with this person ever again?
Yeah. So are you selective about your clients? I guess that's the, you're not.
No, I work with anybody.
That's fascinating. That was not the answer I was expecting. So I guess my follow-up is like, what drove the decision to work, like, say yes to, I mean, like, I guess we kind of covered you say yes to everything, but, you know, since there's no floor in that conversation, I think the natural instinct, people like, oh, well, you get overwhelmed with work, or you'll have lower quality clients or all this other stuff. I think that's like the traditional business, you know, recommendations about that, but you're clearly flourishing. So how is saying yes like that enhanced everything that you're doing?
I like to put great design in the hands of everybody. Great design can, as you, I'm pretty, you very well know, great design can be the face of your business, the face of your stream. It puts power in the hands of the powerless. If somebody's starting a new business, a new t-shirt business, and they need a new logo, you step in the marketplace with a logo that, you know, is made in Photoshop, people are not going to take you seriously. If not, if it's, you know, got greenies in the background, it's got poor, you know, they can't read it, that takes power out of their hands immediately. So my goal was to work with anybody. I have a bar. If you can meet these requirements,
is it like be a moral human? Like,
you know, be a moral human. If it's somebody like I've been approached to work with some very large content creators. They have some very questionable backgrounds, and I'm like, no, I'm good. No, that's okay. I'll take the $400 job over this $5,000 job because this guy's a real, you know, I'm not going on this path. Mm-hmm. I'm not attaching my name to that project.
Right.
You don't want that in your life.
So saying yes to everyone is like a passion point for you. It's like everybody deserves. I like that you said, like, you know, great design can give power to the powerless. So, and I completely agree. I mean, like, I've seen how great design can take something that is. I've seen so many great products. I think talking about it this way makes sense. I've seen so many great products and ideas just like fucking die on the table, right? Because of bad design, because they're like, oh my God, like, here's this thing. It's awesome. And they like do all the engineering work and all software dev and all this other stuff. And then they roll it out and the UX is garbage and no one wants to use it because it wasn't created from an aesthetic standpoint. And I think in tech, and I'm in tech and in streaming, I think people do not put enough weight on the value of excellent design. I remember, I've been streaming long enough to remember when people were like, why would you pay an emote artist?
Yeah, that's interesting times.
Yeah, interesting, it was interesting. It was interesting times, right? So, you know, and now obviously everything has moved forward to where we're at, and the affiliate. So that was, I want to go back to the affiliate program and you launching everything alongside that. So what I found was so interesting is, you know, whenever Twitch makes big changes, I like to watch. I like to see what everybody's going to do, right? Like, and so, you know, some people are obviously mad. People are debating like the requirements, all this other stuff. But you just see, oh, well, every single one of those people are going to need about 5 emotes. So I'm just going to show up and see what happens. So, like, how did you go about acquiring those clients, or did everybody come to you?
Since I had a good foothold in the Destiny community, and there are a ton of Destiny artists, but a lot of them don't make emotes, surprisingly.
That is true.
I just saw that hole in the market, and I just took advantage. Like, whatever you mentioned, like Twitch releases up the new, okay, we're coming up with bit badges. I'm like, all right, time to put the bit badge tweet out. That stuff on my website. Oh, we're releasing animated emotes. All right, time to put out some anime emote examples. Gotta make some for myself. Gotta produce this, gotta produce that. I gotta get it all set up. That stuff is all things. Whenever there's news happening for somebody, when Facebook Gaming came out, we need stickers. Because I did work for Darkness 49.
Yeah.
Facebook stickers. I'm like, oh yeah, Facebook stickers. I'm gonna make some Facebook stickers. I gotta do the examples. I gotta put that in the website. I gotta update the pricing on that and get that all set and get the ball rolling on that. When you see, when the general person sees something happen, they think, man, it would be a great idea if I did work for that, if I set myself up for that. I, on the other hand, or which I recommend most people do, when they see something and they have a thought in their head that they should do something, execute immediately. Because if I know for myself, if I see something and I say I should, I'm already too late. I'm already too late. Ooh. Somebody's beaten to the punch.
You just maybe rewired my brain a little bit with that statement. I don't know. Well, now every time I think, like, I should, I'm just going to hear that behind it. But
there's no worse feeling than saying I should, and then a week later somebody is like, oh yeah, I released this thing, and it's, you know, it's blowing up. I sold 4,000 copies to a
new company. Like,
and you're like,
it's frustrating to miss on stuff like that. The idea that I like is that if you have an idea and you don't act on it, that idea is going to go find someone else, because if it shows up, it wants to exist. It's a playful embodiment. And I mean, I don't know, man, I've spent enough time meditating and thinking that, like, I don't, maybe ideas do float around in the air somewhere we can't see, and they just show up and they talk to a bunch of at the same time. And they're like, this guy, listen, do good things for him. But whether or not it's like that, that always compels me to be like, you know, if I have a good idea, I like to do it good service and, like, see it through to the end. I guess that's my way of depersonalizing it, right? To say, like, you know, it doesn't matter if I fail. I'm just trying to get the best version of this concept out. And with what the creative part of my job is always, how do I tie together all of these ideas and then communicate to a client something that doesn't exist yet that could help them, which is sometimes it's really complicated, right? Like, trying to, when the NFTs were blowing up, and I was just like, some of the charities we were working with, I was like desperate. I was like, dude, these people want to give you millions of dollars, like, just set up an Ethereum wallet or something like that. And it, you know, and it's tough when you're trying to bring everything together like that. But when you're doing service to the idea, it doesn't really feel too bad. Okay. How many times out of, you mentioned you had over 2,000 clients. I think this is going to be like a fun stat. How many times have you started off, you know, with the client doing that one quarter pricing? I'll do a test for you.
Probably less than 10.
Wow.
Because once I find that the idea is viable, like there's a market for it, I break off doing any more. And I just polish that skill on some, you know, my own little test runs off stream or off, you know, on my own. when I first learned Illustrator, it was very difficult because I jumped up from Photoshop. And I, you know, follow a lot of like Illustrator artists, a lot of vector artists, and then I got my hands like I got my hands very wet doing that stuff for like months and months and months. I'm like, all right, I found a course. I'm gonna take a course in esports design. I jumped in that. I watched like a ton of YouTube videos. Everything I've learned has been either free or I paid very little to learn it. I jumped into that. Yeah, if anybody
else is like knocking out people's excuses, like I feel like
if anybody wants to like go to school for graphic design, I went to graphic design. I entered graphic design program in 2001, fall semester, and I flunked out the same semester. I didn't go back. I never went back. I came back to doing design work at 34, 35. I'm 39 now. 34, 35, and everything I've learned has been YouTube and two online courses that cost less than $100. The drive to get better basically turned the business into a six-figure business in 2 years. Number one, have your finger on the pulse of what people want. Because what people want and the hole in the market, that's all things that people see and like, I need this. And you're like, well, I can probably get that done for you. That's the mindset you gotta have. If you have the mindset of, as a designer, I'm like, I'm not making that. I'm not interested in making that. What you're interested in making is irrelevant. I don't want to make that stuff. That is not important.
Okay. That's actually great. That led me into something I wanted to ask you about. What do you do? Like, I know that there's artists out there that say like, I want to stay on this pathway or I want to design what I want to design. How do you see, as somebody who's in that industry, like how is that limiting?
It's limiting because what you want to make isn't what people want to buy sometimes. I love making stuff for myself. I produce hoodies and stuff for myself every year. I produce t-shirts, I make my own merch.
Yeah.
It's not selling tons and tons of orders, but I'm doing it because it makes me happy. It makes my community happy. But if you're looking at every project like, well, I don't want to draw that. I don't want to make this. I don't want to design this. You're just saying, I don't want this money in my pocket. Let somebody else have it. Because I guess you're ruling on cloud nine. If somebody approaches me to make a candy bar design, I've never done a candy bar design before. I'm going to do a deep dive. I'm like, how much is the job worth? $25,000? Then I'll be doing that this weekend. I'm not.
Yeah.
I'm not interested in doing design for packaging for a drink design. And like, no, I'll do it because I'm going to learn something. I'm going to get what the thing is when you do a small project for someone, even if, I'll tell you this, I've done emails for people years ago, like the first 400, 500 emails I've made, they've gone to make on the, they take on their own companies and like, hey, I know you did this very small, irrelevant piece of artwork. It has nothing to do with what I'm doing right now. And every artist is going to have this happen to him. Are you able to do this? And by that time, I'm like, yeah, I can. Here's my pricing. You know, we'll get your entire full branding done. We get it all knocked out for $5K, have it out to you in a month. They're like, that is a lifesaver. I loved working with you last time. I can't wait to bring you on. Here's my portfolio. Because you've had a good rapport with that person. They spent $14 with you 5 years ago.
Yeah.
And they come back like, oh, yeah, I started my own, TV installation business. Can you do our logo? I'm like, yeah.
That's incredible. I think that speaks to, especially with art and artists, if you find I have worked with so many people. When you find someone who is exceptional at communication, who's timely, you will always go back to them. Like, that's my first instinct. I didn't even realize that. But yeah, like, it's always like, oh, I've worked with them before. Like, we have these, you know, you have this list of people who you're like, these folks are, they communicate well, they're easy to work with. Let's make sure we go back to them anytime we have other work. And to back to your, I did a tiny, like, irrelevant piece of art. People remember the folks that like buy into the dream. Right. And so being present in that moment, being the person to provide that, it's such a strong acknowledgement of that person's like will to succeed. It doesn't surprise me that they come back like 5 years later. That's freaking incredible. You got like this lightning storm going on behind you. Is that what's going on?
Oh yeah, it's a little windy in Ohio.
I've been like mesmerized by it the whole time.
This is a green screen, guys. This isn't really my actual office.
this isn't real.
So you've talked about practice and doing stuff kind of like non-publicly, and that transitions into another question I want to ask you is, you know, you've been doing all of this work, but you also have original content and original content ideas that you've been developing. So I am hyper curious about what your process was about, like, oh, I should start doing OC, or like what led to all of that?
Interest. Well, some things are driven by people's interest in what I can do. And some things are just like, I see something like, I'd like to learn how to do that.
Hmm.
That's pretty much it. When I didn't really do character design before, and I've been hanging out with other streamers that do. They've worked on the Boondocks TV show. They've worked, you know, they were other streamers that do, like, you know, character design. I'm talking to them like, I just want to make, you know, I like to draw women. You know, that's bring me joy.
Yeah.
And I'm like, because, you know, you can't just draw. This is one thing you guys don't know. I'm sure everybody knows this. Anybody comes to my stream, the first hour of the day, first hour, 2 hour, I just make whatever I want. I just spend 2 hours on making whatever I want. If it's a busty Oni pouring, you know, coffee all over the place, I'm going to draw it. If it's a fake Destiny logo of a company that should exist, like Destiny, I made one called Destiny Vault Services. They come and clean your vault for you. I made a logo for that just because I wanted to make it. I thought it was funny. I thought it was hilarious.
Mm.
I think one thing I made that was on a whim, you actually tweeted out and kind of blew up. I made a Welcome Back to the Hellmouth little postcard.
Oh, yeah. Design.
Yeah,
oh,
that. Yeah. I was like, I just want to make it. I just want to make it. But some people just make stuff and just put it out, but then they don't attach anything to it.
Mm.
Like, oh, I'll put that on a t-shirt, except for, you know, it brings out bots. I just throw on a t-shirt automatically. Like when we made when I made the Bernie meme, the Bernie Evangelion meme, it exploded. Like some, like, you know, 500,000, like, you know, likes, or 80,000 like retweets. I was like, t-shirt time. Then I made merch under that merch for the Bernie meme, and then put that out. You know, that was another, you know, stuff. I spent a total of 2.5 hours on it for both things, and that generated, like, you know, $750 to $1,000 in revenue, just because I was making whatever I want.
I think that is so you create it, but what I think is fascinating is that you make it, but you, whenever something appears actionable, it's just like right away. Like, you already have the resources on hand, so you didn't have to like go scramble about like, oh, should I make merch, or I should make merch, where do I do that, right? Like, it's clearly been part of your process that, like, operations, logistics, and distribution are things that you're considering. I mean, it seems to be almost constantly, because you're consistently evaluating whether or not something's an opportunity, which I think is fascinating.
Well, there's a very low wall to, like, getting things, like, produced, because everything for DTG.
Yeah.
Direct to garment printing. Like, if you make something and I think it's like halfway funny, I'm gonna throw in a t-shirt. It takes me like 2 minutes, whatever.
Yeah.
If I'm producing, so if you're buying like merch in bulk, you know, this idea has to sell. I'm gonna be sitting on, you know, 500 hoodies for the next, you know, 2 years.
Yeah.
I can't have that happen. You know, that's a little bit different. as a designer, you can. Our minds are so adept to producing things for other people. Sometimes when you just produce something, you're like, whatever, no one's gonna buy it. And then you produce something, you put on a shirt, and like, oh, I sold, you know, 50 of them. You know, I made $50, whatever. I made $1 a shirt, whatever.
Mm.
That's $50 I didn't have before.
Right.
That's kind of the way I look at things. Yeah.
That was, I love the mindset of like not leaving any money on the table. That's like a big part of what got me into streaming. Like at the beginning, I was like, I'm working this dead end minimum wage job. And I sat down and I said, I had been streaming for a little bit, and I was like, do you really think that it is that impossible for you to replace your minimum wage income streaming as much as you want every month? And this was like, I'm not telling you to ask this question of yourself right now, chat. Okay. Things are different environmentally. You know, I started on Twitch in 2013. When it was the thing that everyone made fun of as, you go there if you fail at YouTube. So like I recognize it. I was like, this is an opportunity for me. Because one of the YouTubers I watched for advice was like, if, you know, when I started doing YouTube, my goal was like, if I could just get in the top 1,000 on YouTube, you know, you're set. And I started really early, and my goal was never to be the most famous person on this platform. It was just to be able to like be a personality, to be on this platform. And I thought I could try that. I'm not going anywhere else. And part of that process was like, you know, every sub mattered, and like every, I would make sure I ran ads. People were like, why are you running ads? I was like, that pays for my groceries. I was like, I got paid to shit when I was working in a psych hospital. So I'm going to get paid. I'm going to get paid to shit right now. So I wanted to make sure any opportunity that I had, I would try it. I would try, like, let's see how this monetization things work, because you don't know. And even if it does middling success, like you said, it's $50 you didn't have before, and you never know, like, you never know what you're going to do with that $50. Maybe it's a great date. I don't know. It's fun to me. It's like, this is reminding me of something I said a lot on stream when I got started, which was, I'm really addicted to streaming because it feels like gambling. because you get to constantly throw out creative ideas, and then when something hits, you're like, wow, like shiny lights. So tangent.
I know exactly what you mean.
Yeah, I was gonna ask. Yeah. Do you have that moment when you're creating? I know you mentioned like sometimes things surprise you by being more successful than you expect, but do you have that moment where you're like, wow, I made this, I know it's good, and I know people are going to like it?
Yes, I have that moment pretty often. The thing is, when you're producing something that doesn't have like brand recognition behind it, it's a fire design, you know, it's X, Y, and Z, but it's all about who's backing it. Like, it's always a little bit harder. Like if you have, you know, your top streamer on YouTube or Twitch wear that item that, you know, that you're making, you're going to sell more. So, but if you're, you know, your Joe Blow, it's going to be a lot harder to get your original idea in people's hands and have them be excited about it.
Right.
As excited as you are. That's why when I talk about the things I make for myself, my own personal branding, you've got to be your own biggest fan. No matter what you do, you've got to be your biggest fan. If you make something, you never wear it, or you never talk about it, no one knows you do it, you're never going to move anything. When it came to people asking me, I love your beanie, where can I buy one? I'm like, hold. I researched beanies. Like, this sounds stupid to some people. I bought about a dozen different beanies and had them, like, brought them to my home, tried them all out for a few weeks. I'm like, this is the one. I found the beanie, and I put it up for sale. And it's so, I went through my first box of 500 beanies in like 3 weeks. And I was like, I need more beanies.
That was amazing.
I need more beanies. I need more beanies.
Holy.
So I got this is part of my branding. Like, everything that I produce, when I say things on Twitter, or I say things on social media, that's who I am. I'm putting myself into what I believe in, and in a physical form, and people get a hold of that. And it's kind of nice.
I mean, I think what's so incredible about the work that you do, is that you touched on it earlier. You want to make what they want to see. Right. Like, you're not there to force your perspective on somebody else's request. You're there to try and bring it to its fulfillment. And I think that is something that stands out with all of your work, is you can tell that it's yours because you have certain stylistic choices you make, but everything is so incredibly differentiated because, like you mentioned earlier, like, people bring their ideas to you. And so whether that's, you know, an anime chick with great titties, or if it's a logo design or whatever it might be, right? Like, that you can produce something that feels authentic and incredible for them. And I've always been impressed by that. Even I've been going through your portfolio again, because it's probably been like a year since I looked at your website, and I was like, holy crap, there's so much more parts of this website. I was like, I didn't do enough research. but I want to focus. I wanted to come back because I think another thing that's super important with art or anything creative is learning about taking feedback. So I am super curious, like, how do you take feedback? Like when someone's working with you and how, like personally, like what is your process on dealing with feedback and making it actionable, stuff like that? Cause a lot of people have a hard, I mean, like that's the next step, right? Like you're willing to say yes to everything. And then someone comes in, they're like, you know what? I'm not really. And then like, I feel like that's another hurdle that you can run into where you're just like, oh really? Yeah. Well, are you the artist? Like what, like, this is what I made. So yeah, like what's the, you know what I'm saying? Like it's another hurdle. So how do you navigate that? How do you handle feedback? How would you recommend a new artist handle it?
Number one, don't take it personal. When I do design work, one thing you have to do is don't get attached to your designs. When you produce something like this is fire, it very well could be fire. And the client sees him like, I don't like this. You have to be okay with that. Take that design away and put it away and save it for something else. I've actually made designs for other people. I'm like, oh, but this looks, I've taken the design and put it on something else. I'm like, did you just sell that design that I didn't like? Yeah. And it's doing really well. How's your design going that you tore apart, have me Frankenstein together? I made what you wanted. I will always make what you want. I will give you my recommendations of how it will not work. I will give you a warning up front. I'm going to do this for you. I'm going to make what you want. When I put my name on it, I'm not putting it in my portfolio, but I'm going to do exactly what you want. Here's the thing you wanted. All right. I'm paid. You're happy. Very well. When your community sees it and they're upset about it, do not get upset at me. I've given you fair warning up front. I've given you fair warning. This is not going to work on any shirt, on shirts. It's not going to work as a design. It's not going to work as a logo mark. This is not going to work in general. It's very messy. I've given you all I can. I've done all I can. I can't even do it anymore. I can't do it anymore. So once I get paid and you get what you get, my name's not on it anymore. I'm sorry. I'm not. I'm going to disavow. I'm going to black ops this entire thing. When you get a client that's like that, it's kind of what you got to do. I'm like, this is what you want. Here you go. They go home. But when you get a client, when you tell them, yes, we can go in this direction. I see what you mean, but you don't like this looking like that X, Y, and Z. You take that information, you break it apart and tell them, well, this is will work on what you want. This will not work because it's too similar to this. You give your client a broken down. Don't just say, well, your idea sucks.
That's not constructive, you know, in either direction.
Your client's not a designer. No, that's when somebody asks me for an emo, I'm like, well, I want an emo where, you know, a guy has a refrigerator, he's running around. It's not gonna work out as well.
Love that your client is not a designer.
No,
otherwise
no,
they'd be
you
doing
treat
it.
Him as one. You'd be doing it themselves.
Yeah.
You just have to be responsive to their ideas and just take their ideas and listen to them like somebody you respect was telling you. The thing is, when they tell you ideas, break them down point by point, like an adult. Don't be a kid. Don't get upset because they don't like what you made. All right. Your feelings are irrelevant.
Yeah.
They're not there to make you happy. You are there to make them happy. You know, the waiter doesn't get upset at you for ordering the steak that he likes. All right. That's not how any bartender acts either. Like, well, I want to get that on the rocks. You're like, you should get this on the rocks. Well, I want that. Well, I think you're stupid.
That's not how that goes
at all.
You're out of that bar immediately.
Yeah, you got to be receptive to what people say, and you got to guide them to the best of your ability to bring them to a great design that's going to make them happy and bring them great success. Because this is the entire point to this. If they're successful, you're successful. Foreign concept, I know. And once that person makes a lot of money on that design, what they're going to do next is go, I need you back to make more designs like this. And you're like, oh, really? I'll be there right quick. That's exactly how the shaker design went off. I made one design. It exploded. I'm like, we need you to come on for a year. I'm like, I will be there.
I loved all of that. You have, and I'm so glad that you brought this up. You have an incredibly unique model on how you do things. And you kind of illustrated this by saying, you know, oh, well, if someone doesn't like this, I'm going to take it because I still did it. And I'm going to distro it XYZ. You know, you have a Patreon that I am still subscribed to because I told you I'd be subscribed forever because you made that stupid ooh ooh emote that my chat still loves. From the ooh ooh Genki from Temtem, who I still love even though I've never played the game. I played the game for like a month. Didn't matter.
It was hot. It was hot for a minute.
It was super fun. But you know, you take all of these things and you take your, you know, emotes and things that end up not getting acquired, or probably things now that we've had a chance to talk a little more, probably things that you just made because you're like, this might be fun. And then you still find a way to take them and put them in a location where you can monetize them. Mm-hmm. How did you put that together? It feels really obvious saying it out loud, right, for me, but like it was not an approach, especially with the emotes. I did not see anyone else kind of doing that.
I'll tell you exactly how it happened. Someone approached me for an emote or emotes, and I was like, here are my prices, and they go, I can't afford that. And I'm like, I completely understand. And I thought to myself, what'd be a way to put high quality work into creators' hands that play certain games when they come out, that they can charge, I can charge $10 for you get a dollar an emote,
mm-hmm.
and have it be high quality to, you know, it would compete with the top streams on the platform. And I'm like, I'll just make emotes 10 a month for $10. And that way somebody that does not have money to buy one emote from me can still get high quality work that everyone else may or may not have. Yeah. Twitch is a huge platform with millions of creators. So if somebody else has your emote, I'm like, well, you were subscribed to Khan's Patreon too. But yeah, I love these things. So
it
seemed like a very obvious idea. I know I've seen other creators, other emo artists do similar things afterwards. I'm like, that's awesome.
Yeah. I think, and the reason I wanted to talk about that specifically is that there was just so much like, this is my emote, like this feeling of like, this is my emote, this is my channel. And then, you know, and I got used to like, you know, I'm always paying for emotes, whatever. And then people, you know, like, oh, well, that looks like mine, or like, that's my idea, whatever. And it had gotten, and that, again, this was me being on the platform for like a decade. It got to the point where I was like, this is ridiculous. Like, everybody has a PogChamp emote. Like, you cannot be mad if your PogChamp emote looks like someone else's. That's the fucking point. Right? So, you know, like, that's, like, there's only so many ways to show a surprised face, regardless of what animal or anthropomorphic object it could be. So eventually there's going to be crossover. And so people, when everyone else was still sort of having this discussion on the creator side of things, you launch this Patreon. And I go, oh, shit. I was like, this is brilliant, because it's not about. It was like you recognize something about emotes. It's not about, it's a way to support people, yes, but it's also a way to be involved with whatever is current and happening in gaming. And everybody wants that stuff. I still have I believe this red 13 emote is from you. Yes. Pat. Yeah. I was like, yeah. I've always wanted that. He's my favorite character. That's not going anywhere. You know, so I found that to be, I don't know if you're aware of, at least from my perspective, like, that was very transformative to just bring a product into the market that says, like, do you want to stay current? Do you want to have things people can spam that are high quality for when games come out? I know you could be spending whatever, but like, if you like my stuff, it's $10 a month and you can stay current. And it blew my mind. I was really impressed at how that demystified this ownership idea that people have over these internet memes that are honestly like on their 50th generation before they make it into your chat as a monetizable idea. So I thought that was truly like remarkable. So when you're designing something, and when you are distributing it on Patreon, when you are selling shirts, you're doing branding, you're doing all of this stuff together. To go back to the beginning, it's a lot of work happening all at once. So I am super curious, because this is another thing as a creative that, I think many of us lack or have to learn, how do you keep that organized And how do you keep, I think we all know how you keep discipline around it. You've been really obvious about where you've learned your discipline, but what is your organizational structure to work on all these projects at once from all these different verticals?
Simple. So this is my first book. I write down every single order I get and the order comes in. And then on Sunday, Monday are my days off technically, but no one ever see me take a day off on Sunday or Monday because on Sunday and Mondays I do rush orders. I haven't not had a rush order in 3 years. So that's basically what I do. But I take every single order I get. When people pay, I write it down. Every line in here is literally filled with an order. This is the first three. This one's already filled to the back. So I take it. After I'm done with it, I scratch it off. But Tuesday through Thursday are emotes and animated emotes. Fridays, I kind of just make whatever I want all day.
Mm.
And then Saturday, I get fresh into a brand new design project. So I start doing mock-ups and sketches of logos. I start to put things together for people's brands. I start pulling colors together for branding. And then on Sundays, Saturdays, I do more design work. And Sunday, if there's no rush order, I kind of like play around with some of the ideas I had the night before. But every day is pretty much has something in it. But, 1-2 hours of that day is just me making stuff for myself or trying something new or practicing something that I think could be pretty cool. So everything is written down. When it's written down, once it's done, I exit off. And there's nothing more satisfying than taking one book and throwing it away. And now you got your second book out.
Ooh.
Mm. And you're on whatever page this is of this one.
Yeah.
You use X off things as you go.
I just recently started doing a morning audit where I write down what time I woke up, what time my first meeting is, and then I just list everything I want to try and get done that morning. And then I go back the next day, I'll look at yesterday was fucking stressful. You should have woke up earlier, cut out of these things. And I started doing it I don't usually write stuff down. And within 3 days, I grabbed Amy and I was like, Amy, we need to go somewhere where I can buy a bunch of notebooks because I think that if this notebook thing could work. And I'm like, and so now these are all my project notebooks, and everything's categorized by which part of the business that I'm working on. And I just wanted to say all that.
Project notebook is a whole different book. Yep.
Yeah. Yeah.
The order book and project books are two different books. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I just wanted to back you up on that. If you're listening to this, anyone, I fucking hate reading and writing. I was told my whole life I was not good at it. I have some learning disabilities. So that's always been a big scary monster for me. So breaking that out and just saying, I'll try it, instead of telling myself no, within 3 days, it was completely transformed my life. I actually don't know how I used to think before, which is nuts because thinking is literally my job. And coming up with ideas is my job. So it was unbelievable how blind I was to some of the own processes that I had in my own life until I started writing everything down. So if you are listening, I would really recommend using a notebook to get organized. And this is what I loved about your system. It's not, does not have to be complicated. It doesn't. It can be, I don't know what's NDA in there or not. It can be bullet points. it can be a simple dash. It's your notebook. It's your space. You can do whatever you want. No one's going to crack that shit open and be like, oh yeah. Oh, are these all your clients or whatever?
What I've been told by other designers is oh, you should use Trello or you should use a website that, tracks all your orders. And I'm like, there's a mind body connection that goes into when you write something down. It's in the physical world now. It is no longer in the Ethereum of a cloud server.
Yeah.
It is in front of you. And then you look at it, you're like, it's staring back at you. It's like a cup of coffee on my desk. Like it's something on my screen. I can just click off the screen. I'll forget about it. It's gone. I'll forget about it immediately.
Yeah.
But when you manifest that thing into actual ink and you put it into the real world, it feels more real than Trello or a website that tracks projects or however, you know, people can get by on it. People do well with it. But for me, it's just, it would never get done.
Yeah.
Those things would evaporate. So like as soon as my mind clicks to something else, it'll be gone forever. And I'll have to go back 3 weeks later. I'm like, wasn't that thing supposed to be done already? No. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was. And your client's upset at you.
Yeah.
Like, hey, I thought you were going to get that thing done like in March. I'm like, it's October. I am sorry. But on paper.
Yeah, I did my best.
You scroll back a few pages. Everything's a line through. You're like, this is all done. It's all complete.
I was taking notes on, I got like a Galaxy Tab. And the first half of this year, I was taking notes on that. And it was helpful. But the first time I got a notebook and I started physically writing in it, I was both having a transcendent and infuriating experience at the same time. Cause I was like, oh my God, I can feel this working. And then like the other part of me is like, hey, you remember your whole life when people were like, try this? And I was like, shut up, dude. I was like, not right now. I'm trying to enjoy this. So, you know, even if you've had resistance to trying something in the past, it's never too late to just get started, right? Like, just go for it. Just like you mentioned, I wanted to know, so you've talked multiple times about doing, like, you take time every day and even have a dedicated day of the week to just do whatever you want. Other, you know, psychologists and folks like that, the guru folks, they call that, you know, free think time, right? Where you're just kind of allowed to use creativity however you want. And everyone always asks, what's the ROI on your free think time? Like everybody they want to get granular with it and be like, why shouldn't that be project time? And I think that there's a lot of pressure for artists and creatives to like really account for every second of every day and make sure it's revenue positive. So I'm not a huge fan of looking at things that way because I believe that ultimately it's always going to end up positive if somebody's growing. But what has been your experience? What are some things that have come out that have benefited you, your business, your clients from that free expression of your creativity?
Okay. So if anybody knows me from social media, they know that I am live 7 days a week for the past 4 years. And my free think time, my 2 hours a day of making whatever I want, is the biggest barrier from having burnout. Because when you sit down and you create for others, you're almost instantly drained of all of your energy. And when you make stuff for yourself, you're a little bit happier and you kind of like, you kickstart that inner battery to max power. You're like, I made what I wanted to make today. I can do whatever I want now. I can do whatever I want.
Mm-hmm.
If I have an off idea in my head, like I want to make a coin for when a raid comes out. So I made these little coins. I'm like, let me just mess around with AI. I make a little front and back. I'm like, I'm getting these made.
Yeah.
And I made, you know, a couple hundred coins for like 15 bucks a piece. And when the raid came around, I'm like, get your coin now. I'm like, okay. And the pre-orders came out. I was like, oh my God, this is more than I thought it would be.
Oh, no.
up the order, and they sent them out, and that ROI by itself, you know, made a grand or two. That was just an idea, like make a little coin with, you know, some kind of sand on the back, you know,
right,
when this raid drops. Or that the ROI is just you trying out new things, and the major point is not the money. The money is irrelevant. The major point is your sanity. Like free think time and making whatever you want is just like, this allows me to be excited to sit down and make something. Like if you see work ahead, you're like, I'm gonna go to the office and make stuff for somebody. Yeah, no, it'll be cool. It's for somebody else. But if you're like, man, I saw this anime last night, not really gonna sketch one of the main characters, let me get in there and keep the stream. Where you're like 1 hour in, 2 hours in, I can still get other work done. It's fine. You know, 2.5 hours, I'm having fun, y'all. And you're like, all right, I've done enough. And you jump into that project. You're like, you're warmed up. You're motivated. you're like knocking out sketches like left, right, and center. Like, you're done already? I'm like, yeah, man, I got my get up and go going.
Yeah.
I'm ready to, I'm juiced up now.
That is
9 o'clock at night.
That is so illuminating. So you said some stuff that I want to pull out. I want to make sure people listening heard, because that was, if you're listening to the podcast and you just heard that, just go ahead and rewind and listen to that whole answer again. Because it was phenomenal. If you're like the ROI guy, like burnout prevention is that is the most ROI positive thing in the entire universe. Like, you have no, if you burn your creative team out, you are fucked. Like, you're not like, and I've been, because I have it too, just like being bald. I have experienced burnout. I'm actively experiencing burnout because it's something that takes a long time to recover from. If you get to a point where you're really disenchanted with what you're doing, you're completely disconnected, like life is, everything feels gray because you're just so burned out. Your body's burned down. None of your dopamine, none of your reward systems are functioning properly. It can take years to recover from that place because you're not just dealing with your muscles and your body anymore, even though that's what hurts. You're dealing with your endocrine system. You're dealing with your nervous system. You're dealing with your gastrointestinal system. Your body is breaking because you haven't been giving it the things that it needs. And so burnout prevention is huge. And as you described your process, it reminded me of what a good day feels like for me. Right? Like, I have definitely had days as a streamer where I'm like, oh shit, like, I'm awake up and I'm like, fucking, I'm on Twitter, things are funny, I'm telling jokes, I like check the news, I'm start to put the ideas together, what I want to talk about for stream that day. But that's all when I'm doing whatever the fuck I want. When it's like, goddamn time to stream the fucking popular game because I have to, it is that exact feeling, right? Like, it's going to be good. Like, you're going to have a fun stream. I'm going to make dumb jokes. We'll all laugh. But there's a total difference between being warmed up, being in your element, and having being primed to do whatever it is you have to do that day, because you're inspired and reminded why you love doing what you do. And then you get to work. And that's always when we do our best work. So that burnout thing, you just made me like take my free time so much more serious. I'm going to be like a big dick to people. They're like, hey, can I book you at this time? I'd be like, no, that is my think time.
Yeah. Free time is not, I don't know why free is equated with bad a lot of time.
Yes, actually.
I mean, in a production, like, you know, gear society, like, are you making stuff? Yes, then you're useful. You're not making anything, you're useless. That's incorrect, and it always will be incorrect. When you take time for yourself, you're acknowledging that you exist.
Yeah,
you have your own agency. You're not a cog in the machine. You can break free and do whatever you want. You don't have to keep turning this machine day after day without jumping out and just making some, making some marks in the mud, and, you know, doing whatever you want to do for as much time as you need to before you jump back in the machine and start turning this wheel again. That is one of the main reasons when you become a business, you become your entrepreneur, you start your own business. This is going to make everything more digestible and easier to deal with day after day. Because if you're in a business for yourself and the only thing you worry about is making more money, you're going to come to a point where you're making all this money, but then you're unhappy with everything you do. Because I've as somebody that worked in the service industry in a very affluent neighborhood, I've known people that have made millions of dollars. They're millionaires. They come in and they're the most unhappy people you've ever met in your life because they're on their phone the entire time. They get their laptop cracked open. They're sweating. I'm like, you have a nice Lamborghini out there, whatever, or Ferrari out in the parking lot, but you look like one of the most unhappiest people I've ever met in my entire life. What point is the breaking point?
Yeah.
It's nice to be sustainable. Once you're sustainable, and that could be early on in your business career. Sustainable is like, the bills are paid. I have $100 in my name. To me, that's sustainable.
Fair. No, I'm right there with you.
That, yeah, when you get beyond that, you're like, I need to make more money. Well, making money is fine and good, but can you break that up to smaller chunks or break it up throughout the day or find a better way to funnel your energy when it's time to funnel your energy? If you're just like just wind the wheels all day, you're not getting anywhere.
You won't.
Like, you're worried too much about making more money once you are worried about it. And this is going to be a lot harder for people that need the money right now.
Yes.
They need it yesterday. This mindset is going to be a very hard to appreciate, and that's okay. It takes a little bit of time to actually get into this mindset once you start making a little bit of income. Once you start making, you know, if you're making $30,000, you start making $60,000, your life's going to change.
Mm-hmm.
And you'd be more focused on making more money. That's great goals to have higher income, but you have to take time off for yourself and your family and the things around you to appreciate it, or else the money is going to be worthless.
Yeah.
You're going to be stressed out and you're going to die early. Your heart's going to give out.
You're not wrong.
You're going to have a stroke at, you know, 45 years old because I wanted to make $5 million by the time I turned 50.
Mm.
For what?
Yeah.
It's like $5 million is great, but if you can get there, why would you want to kill yourself to get there? It's like, we're not playing the Squid Game here. Just let it.
It's not Squid Game.
Not Squid Game.
One of my favorite quotes along that line is, the price that you pay to get there is the price you have to pay to stay. And so, you know, if you end up to, and that helped me deconstruct a lot of the way too much working I was doing in my life, because I stopped thinking about how do I income? And I started thinking, how much of this rent of my time do I really want to pay for this income? And there, you know, like turning things down and doing less and recovering is huge. And the other thing is, it was one of the most creatively generative things I ever did, because I became obsessed with refining the time necessary to do things. And you start to find out that, I mean, for me, we were just talking about this today on stream. Like, I've been around technology my whole life. I promise the story has a point. I've been around technology my whole life, but I've been around it so long that I'm used to it not technically having the right solution for what I need, right? Like, I was used to Windows 95 or Windows XP and thinking, oh shit, wouldn't it be nice if this thing could X or Y? And I still have some of those weird assumptions in my head. Like, if I'm like, blah, 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 I was like, God, it's such a pain in the ass to save it. And like, you know, some like Zoomer will come by and be like, oh, you just do this. Bye. You know, and I'll just sit there with my jaw open and I'll be like, God damn it, I'm so old. But you know, but once I decided to stop focusing on let's just work, and I was like, okay, I want to get my time back. I want to stop paying this. I want to stop paying my entire life on as rent towards income. Like, it doesn't make sense to me. It doesn't make me happy. But taking that step back made me realize, like, oh wow, like the magic is here. The magic is trying to take all these really complicated systems and simplify them. Because if I can do it for me, that means you can do it at scale. And it's been really generative for Rare Drop and how we approach charities and everything else. But none of those ideas would have come to me if I was, like you pointed out, just focused on direct ROI, just focused on getting a project done, instead of asking the question, can I get this done faster? Like, can I get this done with less hands on it? Can I automate this? Is there an AI that I could train? Are other people training AIs to do this shit right now? Like, all of these questions started showing up because I took some time back. And all of that. And so part of that is the free thinking time, to bring it back to there. I find it fascinating. Oh, this is the one last thing that I wanted to make sure that we talked about. Right. Mm-hmm. Okay. I got it. Wrapping everything we talked about in a little bow, because I think we've been talking about this one problem the whole time, is that you and I, and a lot of people I have on this podcast, have taken something that we're passionate about, a hobby, and turned it into a career. And there are a ton of pitfalls with that. So I'm, you know, I've had my experience. I've talked ad nauseum on this podcast and other places about, you know, how streaming has changed my enjoyment of gaming. I'm super curious. What was that what was that experience like for you? If somebody's hopping in now and they're like, I want to take this art hobby that I have, this design hobby that I have, and I want to try and turn it into a career. We talked about a lot of things that you should do, but like, let's talk about that internal struggle just a little bit to wrap up the podcast today. So what, like, you know, what kind of things did you go through when you were like, wow, this is like my hobby, but it's my job. And like, it's weird sometimes. I'm not trying to put that on you if you didn't have that experience.
No, that's the experience that you have when you focus only on client output every day.
Okay.
If you are, you could be the most, you know, skilled artist in the world, but if you're not producing anything for your own enjoyment, it's going to get sour fast. Like I'll relate this to streaming. When Fortnite became really big, and you know this, Fortnite was out, there were gamers out there who were really good at the game who hated playing it.
Oh yeah.
But that's why everybody was there, to watch them play Fortnite. If you take that approach to design work and all you do is things for other people, you're going to hate your hobby, and it's going to lose all its life. You're going to suck all the life out of it. And I realized that probably a year into bringing this into a full-time business, that I was just making things, and I don't want to make emotes for myself. I want to make something else. So I looked into other forms of art and other media to produce, or just make something really stupid because I think it's funny. that's how that comic got started. I want to make something stupid today, and now people want to see it every single day.
I love that comic. Every time comic comes out, I'm like, oh, Khan wrote another comic. I can't wait to see what he's talking about. This is going to be great.
I've produced one every day for the past 145 days.
Holy crap.
Because that's, you know, it takes me 7 minutes to write. I just copy paste all the characters. It's like very easy.
Yeah.
And that's my practice in how I would like to learn how to write comics. So what makes a good writer? What makes things funny? What's good comedic timing? Like, you know what? I don't know how to do it, but let's try it out. One, two, skip a few. Just do it. So when you do what you love for a living, you have to remember why you love it. And once you forget that, it's going to all fall apart. You're going to be sitting on stream doing something you hate, wishing you had your old job back. And that's not if the trade-off is more subs, you got the community around you is built for one thing, and that's not good.
Yeah.
If the community is built around you, that's the way to go. You've realized that. I know you've realized this early on in your career. Once the Destiny thing happened, and once Fortnite came, and then Apex, there's going to be waves and waves of games.
Yeah.
That people are come by for, and then when you stop playing, they're going to go, and that's. You have to rectify with those numbers, but you can't let that control everything you do. Or it's going to hate your day from start to finish. You can't have that happen.
Yeah, you really do. Like, you hate that day. You're like,
I've
wake
seen
up.
People's faces. I can see the
it
pain.
Hurts.
I'm like,
it hurts.
Yeah, it doesn't look fun.
You can see it when people are like, it's not like a critique, because we all have to show up. And we all have to do our job. I think for me, that was the hard part of the beginning, was being like, does this mean I fucking suck at my job? Like I had a real crisis. Like, I have been pushing myself, and that's the only way I know to function in a net positive way. Part of that was because I was like in survival mode from my life, you know, and all of the things that led into streaming, which was really like the first big bright spot that I had. And so I was in survival mode, and I was like, like, if I take my hands off the gas, like, am I just going to like fall back down to, you know, minimum wage working in a psych hospital all over again? And what's really weird, and you did a great job pointing this out. I knew shit was super fucked up when I started getting really nostalgic for the nights I would spend in the psych hospital. I was like, I have my dream job. Why am I daydreaming about like getting urine thrown at me. Like, what is, like, why do I have the these positive memories of getting, like, verbally accosted by somebody who, like, needs some help? And that really, it, that, that's what sort of kicked off the whole, like, okay, well, I'm like, that's not healthy. Like, I don't know much about much, but I know that that's, like, not good, because I should be happy with where I'm at. And I think that when you get to a point where you start to envy people around you that have normal jobs, right? Because we like to think as a creative, sometimes you can do that. Like, I'd love to show up to work and know I'm going to make X amount of dollars today, because there's a lot of convenience and safety in that. But one of the things, and I think I hadn't reckoned with this yet, that you, if you're doing creative work, is that you're going to have to accept that your income is going to be highly volatile and variable. And so you should, as you pointed out, if you can live off $30,000 and you start making 60, why not just keep living off $30,000? And then you're saving $30,000 a year. Like, you literally just doubled your income and you're putting money in your pocket. Right. And when you start remembering, like, oh wow, like, I can really, I don't need this, I don't need that, I can just live the same way, but successfully and enjoying the things that I like, it is a massive step forward from getting, you know, untrained from that client work all the time. Mm-hmm. That was, man, this is, I've learned more on this podcast alone, just like hearing how you think about stuff, than I think any other podcast we've done. This has been, I want to say thank you personally for showing up and being so open and honest about your process and about how you approach things every day. Anybody that is listening to this, if you're an artist, you need to listen to this with literally every friend that you have that wants to be involved in graphic design or anything. And you need to follow Khan literally everywhere. So yeah, we're coming up on the end. This is the point in the show when I like to toss it over to you. Any projects, anything you want to pitch, as long as you'd like to talk, you can talk about anything you've got coming up, anything you'd like people to know.
Okay.
You got tons of stuff. So
I got tons of stuff. The important thing I want to leave with any new designers out there, are people that want to get into creative work or design work or illustration or anything in this market, is, number one, it's going to be difficult to secure your first client or clients. Don't take that to heart. Your craft only gets better every day. You don't get worse. So focus on that and getting better. And don't be dissuaded when you hit your first wall. Don't try to climb the wall if your arms are too weak. Find a way to walk around it or dig yourself under it. That's my base advice. Also, this is another piece of advice for any designers out there. Raise your goddamn prices. Raise your prices. Raise your prices. I've seen too many designers over the past 5 years, only 5 years. Designers I will consider better than myself stop designing because they were charging $50 for a rebrand, and now they're broke and they're back from the job they had before. So that's number two. The stuff I'm doing now, that's, I want people to know that if you're a designer, don't stop taking what you do for granted, and don't put as much time in that would be less than minimum wage. Okay. I'm gonna get off that high horse for a minute.
That was great. Raise your prices.
Raise your prices. When people say, why is your logo design, you know, $400 to $5,000? I'm like, well, what are you using it for? You know, what capacity? Do you want to look professional, or do you want to get something that I'm going to forget in 2 seconds? That's you're trying to be successful. I'm here to make you successful. So I believe you want to pay me that amount of money. So that's what I want to get that horse. Raise your goddamn prices. I'm going to say, for the things I'm doing right now, if anybody's following me on social media, I just released my next hoodie drop. I release a hoodie every year. This is my fourth hoodie that I've produced. It is a pullover. So you can go check that out on my pinned tweet. My second course is coming out. If anybody didn't know, I have an emo course that has over 300 students. You can check that on my website. I have an emote animation course coming out in the following weeks. If you want to hire me, I'd love to work with you, but I know that may not be possible because of how far booked out I am. But you can check me out on conartist.org because I like playing with my name.
That's a good. It's good.
Oh yeah, it was. It comes in handy for every title I have for some reason. I just like it. I don't know. I got the nickname. Maybe like here's a fun little piece of information. I got the nickname Khan from training and competing in Mongolian wrestling. So I was called Little Khan or
okay.
young Genghis Khan.
That's amazing.
Pretty hard. So the name wasn't art related at all. That was a name I got a nickname earlier on. So there you go. The consistency. There you go.
Consistency. Yeah, I see that all the time. Yeah. I was like, just man's out here branding words. Like this is
yeah. There's just concepts, consistency, conquer. I'm taking it all.
Yeah.
Taking it all. I think I'm gonna leave it there though. So
okay.
That's gonna be the short and sweet of it.
All right. Well, for me, you know who I am. I'm Professor Broman. So put me in the Google box. You can find me wherever that directs you. As always, thank you so much for listening to the podcast today. You can leave a review if you'd like. You can leave comments if you'd like. But more important to me than anything else is that if you thought of somebody while you were listening to this podcast today, I want you to share it with them. If you thought, oh, that would make so-and-so's life better, do it. Take some advice from today's podcast and just do it. Don't say I should. Just do it. I think I have one. Did I remember to bring it up or did I not? I believe I have. Now I'll figure this out later. I thought I still had our Patreon list up. You'll get a bumper. Don't worry. From myself and from Khan, thank you so much for tuning in today. And we will talk to you all next time. Bye bye. Internet people who are listening or audio people. Bye.